Okay, I think it's actually it's after 3 o'clock. I want you to welcome you all to the Environmental Advisory Committee. There's agendas here if you haven't received any. Pass around. I think we have a quorum. So we're all set. In front of you is the agenda, and one of the first items of business is approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Yes. Oh, thank you, Jim. Second? Very good. Do we have any... We don't have any changes? You want to make modifications? I should have done that first. Okay, let's proceed. Approval of the minutes of our last meeting, which was 3 months ago. That was emailed to y'all. Anybody have any things they want to modify the previous minutes? Corrections? Hearing none, I will accept that as approving of the minutes. Okay. We have a new member who has been appointed, Susan Meal. She has an extensive background in recycling, so she's a worthy addition to our committee. Welcome aboard.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Okay, moving on to old business. What is the, and maybe Megan would chime in,
from the county attorney's office.
Somebody else. What is the status? We submitted a request to include the cost of erosion control and abatement of downstream pollution in future security bonds.
Sorry, that was me. I was looking at item number two. The commissioners have the request. It was put in all of their boxes, a hard copy, and it was emailed to all of them.
Okay. So they have not acted on one?
They have not acted on
it. Okay. If they do, let us know.
Okay. Thank you.
The second item concerns Seven Falls, which has been a serious problem with respect to erosion coming off of that site and causing downstream defugities. Has the county been able to take any meaningful action to abate that?
I'm Sarah Zambon from the county attorney's office, and I'm here to answer any questions you have about Seven Falls. What I'm handing out to you now is a few articles from the paper on where we stand with Seven Falls. As some of you may know, Keith Vincent, the original developer, and several investors on the project have been indicted and are going to appear in federal court for several charges of fraud and wiretapping and some other stuff. They're all listed in there. From the county's perspective, we're still pursuing the security bond, which I'm sure many of you know about, and it's also included in those articles. Where we are in that process is that in early May, Russ Burrell, the county attorney, appeared before the Court of Appeals in Raleigh to argue the county's case regarding that we should get the bond money so that we can proceed forward. So right now we're just waiting to hear from the Court of Appeals about what their decision is. Depending on what their decision is, the insurance company may appeal that to the Supreme Court. They may not. So right now we're just waiting on the process to move forward. I'm happy to answer any questions any of you may have. Yes?
Are there any relatively inexpensive stopgaps that we as a county can do to keep it from getting to a bigger problem? Like if a tree limb hits the roof of your house while you're waiting on the insurance, you can throw a tarp over it. I mean, could we put up like a barricade or something to keep the erosion down?
I addressed that in one of the articles. The reporter for one of those articles that interviewed me and asked me that same question. The problem is that there aren't any easy fixes or cheap fixes for Seven Falls because it is such a large project, because so much land was disturbed. initially. And the county, you know, as you've seen from articles and from, you know, working on this board, doesn't have a lot of money right now due to the nature of the economy. So we don't have the money to put into it. And that's the whole reason that we do these security bonds in the first place, is so that there will be this pot of money there to put in the infrastructure and to fix the soil erosion measures when it falls apart. So, no. Currently, we are just pursuing this litigation right now and trying to also work with the insurance company to see about, you know, if they're willing to settle, if they're willing to move forward, if they're willing to give us any of that money. Because the county doesn't have any money to put in this project. And that's why we're...
It is near the creek. If somebody put up like a silt barrier to keep it from washing into the river or the creek?
There are several silt fences out there, but the issue is that they haven't been maintained. Mm-hmm. So the silt fences only work if there's fairly regular maintenance clearing out the silt and moving it somewhere else. And we don't have the resources to maintain silt fences.
Clean out the silt.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Just out of curiosity, what is the position of the insurance company, the bondholders, for hanging on to the funds?
That's an interesting
question. Other than that, they make money out of it by keeping it in the bank.
Right. Clearly, it's just like your medical insurance or any kind of insurance you have, right? The insurance companies, it's not necessarily in their interest to pay out, especially in this case where it's a $6 million bond. Their legal argument, which you're more than welcome to look at, it's posted on the Court of Appeals page, both sides' arguments. There was a statute that was passed in 2009 and 2010 called the Permit Extension Act. And the Permit Extension Act was intended initially to, because of the downturn in the economy, to allow people's permits, zoning permits, building permits, subdivision approvals to a certain extent, last longer than what their statutorily or ordinance would normally allow because of the downturn in the economy. So it would last until the statutory term and it would be stayed during that term. So like if you had a building permit and you'd gotten it and you had 2 years to do it, it would be stayed during that period of time, and then the rest of the time would continue after December 31st, 2011. So their argument is that the bond should fall under the Permit Extension Act, even though by its name it is not a permit, and the Permit Extension Act applies to permits. Our argument is that it is a contractual agreement, these improvement guarantees, and therefore not subject to the Permit Extension Act, and that the bond language in itself that was given to us by the company had an expiration date on it. And if it was reversed, they wouldn't say that they were subject to the Permit Extension Act. They would just say that they didn't have to pay. So I don't know how it's going to end up. There's no certainties in the law, necessarily. Mm-hmm. But I do, and I'm a little biased, clearly, do think our argument has a lot more legal footing in terms of the language. Yes?
In the meantime, if they're saying they have more time to do this work,
mm-hmm.
could we not press them?
They are not saying they have more time to do this work. They're saying Mr. Vincent, who may or may not be in jail at any given time, has more time to do this work.
And Mr. Vincent, responsibility over their
they do not. They forward. Say that he has, you know, he has the remaining time to finish this project. He and the developer has the time to do it. As you'll see from one of the articles in there, Mr. Vincent talks about not having the resources to be able to finish the project, and that he thinks the county should go in and do it. The issue is that there's, you know, the people with the money don't want to do it, and we don't have the money or necessarily the ability to do it.
Does the county have a prioritized plan of action in the event that the money does come?
Yes, if we got the money tomorrow,
yeah.
We do already have a priorities plan. It probably needs to be updated since the last time we looked at it, but a prioritized plan of what goes in first based on, because again, I understand, this is the Environmental Advisory Committee, but you have to keep in mind there's
there were a lot of components of the original improvement guarantee besides soil erosion measures, road stabilization and slope stabilization. There was also infrastructure, water and sewer. There were roads. There were some stream crossings. So there are a lot of different components of the improvement guarantee. So we have prioritized those based on the most urgent need and also practically what needs to go in first.
And the game plan may predicate that, that am I wrong in thinking that by fixing infrastructure, the roads and all that, they'd be more sellable, so we move on? I mean, would that be part of the thought?
Part of the thought would be putting in the roads and the infrastructure will first of all stabilize the land and the property, and it'll do away with a lot of the ground cover issues that we currently have. And then also, yes, once infrastructure is in, people who have already bought lots out there, which there are numerous people, you know, who have bought lots out there, I know because they call me, they will be able to go in and build because right now they can't access their lots. And whatever remaining lots there are would be more marketable. Because, you know, I mean, why would you want to buy a lot you can't currently access and that has all these articles about it?
The bond is the $6 million.
The bond is $6 million.
Does the judge have the ability to split that in any way? I just wonder.
I mean, you know, as a lawyer, we always say judges can do whatever they want. You know what I mean?
But you're asking for all or none.
Well, we need the whole amount to do all the infrastructure that's in there. One of the issues of contention, and it's fairly minor, but it adds up, is the issue of interest. We originally started litigation on this case in 2010. The Superior Court heard this case as a summary judgment motion last August, 2011. Now we're in 2012. So some of the money that was supported by a letter of credit from a bank. The bank said, we don't know who to pay because the bond company says that we should give it to them, but the county says that we should give it to them. So that's being held by the court. So there's the issue of the interest also is another issue of contention in terms of the county wants what's statutorily allowed from the time we filed, and the bonding company, of course, doesn't want to do that. Because, again, any amount of interest on $6 million adds up pretty fast, especially over 2 years. Yes?
If Vincent and his cohorts go to jail, who is the person now able to sell the properties that is remaining?
The property is actually held, the majority of the property, and especially the parts that are in our litigation, are held by the LLC, not himself. The property will be held by the LLC and whoever the remaining members are, whoever the principal is or the agent for that would be able to act on its behalf. If Mr. Vinson goes to jail and there's another principal, they would be able to act on that behalf.
Okay.
The other issue that may or may not come up is that there is a significant mortgage on this property. He didn't have the money to buy it out. So at some time the bank could, though it has not happened yet, foreclose on the property, and then the property would be in the bank's name.
Okay, that's what I was really getting at.
How
close are we to that type of situation?
Well, that would be up to the bank. I mean, every once in a while I think we're close, and then we're not close, and then, you know what I mean? It's really up to them. And, you know, for them, right?
Just think what would happen if interest rates were paying 8, 10%. You'd never get your
money. Well, and the other thing is, right, I mean, why does the bank want this property that has no infrastructure in it if they can wait to see what happens with our litigation and maybe we'll put some infrastructure in it and it'll be more valuable to them?
That, and if the bank picked it up now, they'd be liable.
Exactly. That there are violations on this property, both our violations and state, and some Army Corps violations exist on this property because of the environmental problems, and there is the issue of liability for whoever would take it on next. And, you know, that's always a concern, especially with property this big. Anthony, did you have something you wanted to add?
Just to answer Mr. Bixman's question was that most of the area where the infrastructure is bonded, most of those lots, about 150 of the lots have been conveyed to third party and have already been decided after being conveyed to third parties. So we don't even have to deal with the developer owning part of the property.
Any idea when the court may rule?
Your guess is as good as mine. I'd asked Russ this before, because he has more experience clearly than the Board of Appeals. And for social services cases, which are normally fast-tracked because they deal with kids and everything, the wait on those has been a turnaround of about 4 months. So this would be after that. So it could be 6 months. I mean, you know, and again, it depends, you know, how clear-cut they find it, how much research they have to do, and, you know, there's, you can't put pressure on the Court of Appeals.
Yeah.
You all have any other questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, moving on to a recycling issue. We have an opportunity to participate in a tour.
Yes, thank you. I'm Katie Breckheimer. I am chair of the Eco Recycling Committee, and I sent out an email a couple of days ago to invite you all to come on an eco tour to American Recycling, which is in Inca. It's a new plant that opened in January, and it's where all of our materials go to be sorted and baled and marketed. And if you've never been to a MRF, a material recovery facility, it is a trip to go and see all of these machines and people in action. So our tour starts at 3 o'clock, and we were going to meet at 2 o'clock, and that would be on Tuesday, July 10th. And I promised that we would be home by 5:30. And I have a sign-up sheet.
July 2nd?
10th.
July 10th, Tuesday, July 10th. And I can leave this and let you pass it around, or you can contact me by email. Would be your preference. We are limited to 15. And I was also going to invite the city's environmental board, the Environmental and Sustainability Board, to join us as well. So it's a first-come, first-served basis, and we'd love to have you join us.
Thank you.
Could I pass this?
Sure, sure. Yeah, I guess pass it around.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
No problem. Okay. Regarding the railing issue, I may just be hitting the convenience center at the wrong time, but I invariably run into someone of shorter stature or a little bit less physically able to get their stuff over the railing into some of the bins. And I raised that issue. And one of our members who was not able to be here responded, Robert did, and made some comments on what's going on at the recycling center. And rather than go through all that, I just copied his email to let you have this rather informative information. I also don't want to take it up. This is Mr. Del Witch? Which? Which? Del Witch. Okay. And he supplied a comprehensive answer as to what's going on, sorry about that, at the recycling center. I appreciate that the railings are there as a result of an OSHA requirement.
There's the second page, I'm sorry.
But I also understand that Megan may have some information about something that's being done to try to provide easier access to the bins.
Robert alluded to it in the email. It is written out. I spoke to him yesterday afternoon. As we're able to buy new containers, they're buying lower profile and open top containers. Some of the ones that are in better shape, they're kind of retrofitting. Sometimes you'll go out there and you'll see, especially they try to keep those with the cans and the containers more than they do the paper and cardboard. But they are moving towards buying and retrofitting those as we can. That seemed to take care of most of the issue. I personally have not received any complaints in months. That's what we're doing.
Good. Thank you. Okay, moving on to new business and the main part of this meeting. We have the pleasure of having Dr. Gordon Small join us. And Rich, you want to do an introduction?
I didn't plan that, but I will. I can introduce myself. That'd be a little easier.
That'd be fine. We had been emailing back and forth to assure that Dr. Small could make it, so that was my part.
Well, first off, coming down here to Haywood County has obviously increased my educational levels because I'm not a doctor. I graduated from the University of Maine with a degree in forestry, and I worked for the U.S. Forest Service in a lot of capacities, including what we call the plans, but also in watershed issues and water quality issues and planning and all that kind of stuff, too. But moved around from Eastern Kentucky to Atlanta to Arkansas to D.C. office and then out to Milwaukee and back to D.C. office, a lot of different assignments. We retired about 16 years ago and moved to Haywood County. And we lived at Balsam Gap in Haywood County. I got a lot more involved in this stuff, water quality issues, when I started working with the Haywood Waterways Association. How many people here have heard of the Haywood Waterways Association? Okay, very good. Anyway, when FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, relicensed the Waterville Reservoir, normally FERC and environmental groups will go for more bypass focus. But in that case, because of the dioxin in the water, there weren't a whole lot of folks anxious to have more of it going downstream. So they compromised and they set up a fund, the Virgin River Fund, that was supposed to be used for reducing non-point source pollution. And quite frankly, Haywood Waterways was formed to make sure that Haywood County got its fair share of those dollars. So we have done a lot of things in the intervening years. Let me go ahead. I can unplug it and replug it.
Why don't I just unplug it and restart it?
We're operating system.
Just a matter of getting the
XP.
Get Windows XP?
No, Linux.
Did you have it working earlier?
Yeah.
Okay. Super.
Listening to your discussion about the subdivision, I forget the name of it.
Seven Falls.
I've heard the name somewhere.
Yeah,
but we have a lot of those same issues in Haywood County. fact, our terrain is quite a bit rougher than what you deal with. And we've been dealing with issues of mountainside development, of course, for a long time. We decided a while back, about 2005, 2006, that we actually had the technology now, like 5-foot conduit rules and other things, to begin to work toward providing folks with information that might be helpful in ensuring more stable developments. Our primary objective is keeping the mud out of the creek. Some of our funding comes from the Fish and River Fund, but we have a lot of other sources of funding as well. But the anyway, I'll show you how this all. And while you're interested, these are going to look kind of familiar. Did all of you know what an integrated pollutant source inventory is?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, TVA, TVA project. Now, that thing's reversed, but what was interesting, they classified Haywood County into 24 land classes and then applied various coefficients to soil loss by those classes. Now, roads was a problem, and they had it blown way out of proportion. So we worked with CalEDA and NRCS and others to come up with appropriate coefficients for roads. But you can see that roads have now become the single largest source of sediment in the watershed. So that's one reason we're interested. Of course, you're all familiar with those scenes. We had this fellow, this was built on a 60% side slope, and of course, nothing would talk. There was no engineering. And this particular section of road is a half mile long. The people that were living in this development called an engineering firm in Asheville to find out what it would cost to stabilize it. And they were told it would be $5 million for a half mile road. A lot of stories. I don't need to bore you with all those. We've had developments like this one is in the Waynesville area where it was built on unstable geology, and the houses began to pull apart. And so the city condemned 5 of those houses. People had to pay $25,000 to have their houses torn down, and then they, of course, they still had their mortgages if they... kind of sad. I think you may have heard about this. In Maggie Valley, we had a earth movement, throw the house apart, kill the person. We've had a few of those situations. Okay, and another concern to us, when we establish, when we do watershed improvement work, Rosgen method, this is along the golf course near Lake Junaluska, that's nice in those downstream areas, but if you don't get to the headwaters of the stream, you may be just wasting your time and money. You really need to be focused in the headwaters, and that's where an awful lot of the mountainside development is going on. So mountainside development became a big deal. Of course, we have Lake Junaluska, and it makes a great catchment pond for what goes on up above. And in this particular project, they were spending about $1 million to stop that portion of the lake from becoming a wetland, basically, because it was quickly filling up the sediment. That's kind of why we're interested. These are the key concepts. More stable, safer developments and reduced offsite impacts. Somebody dawned on us that we actually have skills in Haywood County, and you probably have them here too, to assess the suitability of the resources. One of the key skills was a fellow named Doug Thomas, who is a very experienced soil scientist working with NRCS. He's retired now, but he spent almost 30 years here in the mountains, and he is very knowledgeable about soil conditions, and we use some other folks, watershed specialists and others, in helping with this process. Our focus in terms of the Haywood waterways is wise use, not no use. We're not out there to try to stop the use. We're just out there to try to make sure that it's built according to what the land will stand. And we're looking at resource suitability, not engineered possibilities. Simply because we are told, when all this got started, we said, well, we can engineer our way around this. But if you start out with a bad situation, it's very expensive to engineer your way around it. It has to be maintained, and if it's not maintained, it will fail. So if we start out looking at the resource suitability to begin with, it works out better. So we did a resource assessment within a GIS format. We did 5 test projects before the 2007 recession hit. Landowners were interested in doing this. Of course, we didn't charge them anything for these pilot projects. Resource assessment is an on-site field assessment. It includes a GPS inventory. It incorporates all that information into a three-dimensional GIS model, and then the information and tools to the developer to effectively utilize the results of the assessment. But it's an assessment of resource capability. It is not an engineering design. What we would hope is that the results of the assessment then would be used in the subsequent design. Here's a typical parcel, 165 acres. The landowner was very interested in trying to avoid having to go through a lot of county hoops, so he wanted every tract to be 10 acres minimum in size. He'd already started some road work. Here's a couple of the folks that worked on the project, and these are some of the key resources that we think you really have to look at. Soils, watershed response. For example, in our area, and probably in yours too, as you start building up the, you build first down low, and then you go up higher, and the more you build up there, the faster the water comes downhill, the more problems you have. Geology, terrain. Haywood Community College helped us out, and doing GPS work. I don't know about soils maps in Haywood County, I mean in Henderson County, but soils maps in Haywood County were done primarily for agriculture. That's what NRCS did. They did soil mapping for agriculture. On the mountainsides, they grouped. That EDF is an Edneyville complex, and it contains a lot of, there's that showing the variation just on slope within that one soil complex. Now those are funny looking lot shapes, but it's simply because they wanted the 10 acres. What we recommended to them was, you know, if you actually put a scenic conservation easement on the lower part of that property and the state goes along with it, you could actually get, of course, a corporation up to $500,000 in state tax credits, and you get federal tax deductions as well. So, you know, you could get all the lots you said you wanted, and very valuable lots back then, probably around $500,000 or $600,000 a lot. And the it's up high, it's around 5,000 feet elevation up there on top. So, anyway, but the key point here was, people said, well, why can't we just use a soils map? You can't, because they didn't go into enough definition. But I like the aerial photography information, the 5-foot GIS model, because if you look, you can see those little green strips going through there, those little level strips. Those are roads they had put in there at one time, old logging roads, and they show up on maps. Here's another project that they'd already actually put the lots in. We went in, we looked at them, we told them the best location for the roads, and told them what some of the best house sites they had out there to work with. And gave that off to the landowner. What we discovered was that boots on the ground was absolutely critical. That an experienced soil scientist is a very critical skill that knows the mountain soils. Problem is, NRCS, in spite of changing their name to the NRCS from the Soil Conservation Service, they are still an agriculturally focused organization. They're pulling soil scientists out of the mountains because agriculture is declining here. You need soil scientists more now than you did for agriculture, in my view, because they can tell you things. If they know, you can't take somebody down on the coast and expect them to come up here and immediately know how to do that. But if you've been here for a while and somebody like Doug works for you for a while, you can learn this stuff. But that's a critical part. Geology is another critical part. You may or may not know, we're trying to, even though the state has taken the money away from the landslide mapping project, we are trying to fund that, and of course it's a dicey proposition because that's gotten to be a pretty controversial thing over the last five counties they've done for a variety of reasons. But we think working with it locally in a not state-imposed project, we can actually get acceptance of that and use in some fashion or other. We have discovered that the model is a very effective technology transfer, and the people change lot locations based on the survey process. It costs about $6,000 to $7,000 per 100 acres. Landowners generally like the information, but then they often went ahead and did what they wanted to anyway. So we thought, well, that's interesting, but how in the world can we make this thing a little more enticing? We thought, now the word's getting around about the fact that if you build here in the mountains or buy here in the mountains, you may have some problems. And if we can offer somebody, if the county can offer somebody a certification process whereby you can say that you've used this information and some other things that I'll hand out here, use the best management practices. It's non-regulatory, but it encourages best practice. You'll get this certification, but you'll give somebody moving here some assurance that you actually looked at the resources on the ground before you put a bulldozer out there. And the everybody thinks it's a great idea. Our problem when we went to the county planning board was, though, as you'll see when you hand these out, these are kind of performance standards for certification. These have had a lot of look-see. They're a little higher than what the county has for their minimum standards. Our reaction was, this is voluntary. You know, if somebody doesn't want to have to do this, they don't have to. The county, I think, was kind of saying, well, this kind of says maybe our standards aren't up to snuff. And so that's kind of holding things up right now. But from our perspective, it's a strictly voluntary. If you choose to build, right now you can build to a higher standard if you want to. The county's not going to stop you from doing that. But the certification process, which would be a real incentive to builders to have this, so far has been a sticking point for them going ahead with it. But we really think this is a voluntary system. You look at the resources, you'll solve an awful lot of the problems you're having in that major subdivision down here if they've done that to begin with. And it's not that expensive when you consider the amount that goes in this. Principles derived from this pilot. One thing, you know, normally what has happened in our area, your area may be different, but they'll go in on an old logging road and they'll just lay out the lots perpendicular to the road. Sometimes that results in the driveway on a 20% grade. And of course, they don't pave that, so they have no alternative. But the if you locate the house site and you locate the driveway and you locate the septic before you build it, put in the lot boundary, everybody's life's going to be a whole lot easier. I guess I was in. Anyway, that really does work, and it makes a great deal of difference, because so many of the problems we have are simple things like driveways, and we have an awful lot of very steep driveways. Best practices for Haywood County, these are the things that we feel are the best for the mountains. They aren't imposed by the state, but the things that we think are good. But once you're all done with this, and it's been designed, it's been put in place, and you've gotten your certification and all that, most all these developments have covenants. And there's some of this stuff that needs to carry over into the covenants so it isn't forgotten about when new houses are built and all this kind of stuff. And and here's an example of some of these processes. Stormwater measures built based on build-out development. I live in a mountainside development, and I swear they put those culverts in based on, when it was timberland. And so every time, that's been interesting for us, but we manage it. We're saying, I wanted to go higher on this. I mean, stormwater measures based on a 25-year event. Well, my reaction is, we get a lot of storms that are greater than 25-year events. But anyway. No primary access road culverts, less than 18 inches. No conventional septic on slopes greater than 50%. 30-foot stream side buffers. Maximum road grades of 15%. Paywall over 10%. Again, all voluntary. Those are just some of the ideas. We wanted to see an independent board that involved people from the development community and the stormwater district and so forth. And this is a process we propose using. And wrapping it up, when it's all done, also the association needs to have a stormwater maintenance plan. A lot of people who wind up on homeowner association boards don't know much. about managing the property, and they don't understand what water can do. And so the developer should leave the association with a stormwater maintenance plan to make sure everything's kept up. And then integrate those certain certification requirements into the governance that run with the land to make it permanent. These are just thoughts. Do you have any questions or comments or anything?
Is your program proprietary?
No. You know Bill Yarborough? He's very active in state government and all, and he's on the RC&D committee. He's on the Waterways Board. He thought we ought to put this together in some sort of a DVD and just send it around to folks in case anybody is interested. Pigeon River Fund did pay for some of this, so that would be one way of sharing it. But it's all based on the fact if you look at the resource first, before you lay stuff out, you're going to have a better answer in the end. Again, it's not saying don't build, it's just build well.
Has any developer adopted this?
Well, we haven't gotten the county to buy off yet. We're still working on that, on the fact. We've taken a couple of county commissioners out and showed them some stuff, and we've taken them out. There's a development up there that was finished recently where the roads, the county does have some, we've been there 16 years in Hayward County, and the county has moved quite a distance from where they were when they first moved there. But they have a top limit of 25% on road grades after appropriate engineering analysis. But we took them to a development where it was 25-27% going up almost the whole way. I can't imagine paving that thing, but they did. We were just asking them, is this what you wanted from the county ordinances? But of course, any change in regulation is about impossible these days. So that nothing's going to change there. But if somebody uses this approach, and there were ways to build where you didn't have to build on that 25%. You come down there in January on ice, it would be absolutely interesting.
I was going to ask how the development community is absorbing this.
The development community right now is just about dead.
Well, not now, but when
at the time we had a lot of interest in it. Okay, and we had people who large developers who just wanted us to come out and drive us around that development. This kind of stuff. A lot of people wanted to see this information, but what was frustrating to us was, for example, that tract I showed you where they wanted 10-acre lots, I guess they decided it wouldn't be so bad to build with it, to have more lots and deal with the county, so they put a road right down across that steep of stuff. And we learned stuff by doing this. We learned some things we thought were very helpful, particularly with GPS today, and I'm sure we could integrate survey-grade GPS to make this lot location and boundaries and stuff down simple. And Banks, one of these outfits that we did this with, went in with this type of information instead of a standard plat and the bank all the money on it. So I think if a bank sees that there's some thought behind the process, but again, we got fell off at the knees, of course, when the money dried up and there were no more rate. But the county is still concerned about somehow that this being a better, higher, well, let's put it this way, a higher standard, voluntary though it may be, that somehow that might leave some sort of a bad impression on what they do. But the, we haven't given up on it by any means. But we think it's a good tool, but you really need to. If somebody was thinking about seriously doing this, I would contact Doug Thomas and talk with him because he is one of the key people. And you can imagine how the landslide mapping stuff would integrate within the GIS format of this stuff. People think because they map it that there's going to be a landslide there. All they're saying in the mapping is you need to look at this in a little more detail before you go out and build it. And if you're operating on a 60% size slope, you probably do need to get a little more information to avoid problems. Because that subdivision up there outside the Maggie Valley Golf Course, that shouldn't happen. What the developer did up there was almost overnight, he created a homeowner association, walked away from it, and started continuing building on up the mountain. Hmm. Now, an attorney told the people that live there, you could probably sue him, he would declare bankruptcy, and you wouldn't get anything, and things would go on. So if you can get out in front of the process and get people buying into the fact that, yes, this may be one of the more difficult areas in the country to build, you need some expertise. You need soil scientists, geologists, and like engineers and others to help you do it right. It doesn't cost that much to do it. But anyway, yeah.
Most of the developers in Haywood County sell their own properties, or they work for the real estate community?
Well, Bob Brannon, you know Bob, he has a realty company, and he also is a developer. And
it's the real estate community involved at all.
Oh, yeah. Realtors would like this. Insurers would love it. You know, and I've talked to banks, we have some people from the banking community on the board, and I'm real good friends with a fellow with State Farm up there. And I said, if we were to do this, you know, would there be any breaks? I wondered if the banks might even lower at more favorable rates if their risk was less.
Yeah, I didn't order coming along, we at least know that someone building up above them wasn't going to slide in there.
Exactly.
There's a lot of good reasons for it. Trying to understand the resistance is always something about it.
Well, to me, since it's voluntary, and that's the part, you know, and we have a place up there, a community in Maggie Valley, and that's really special. When we get this geological survey done, I expect they'll show some interesting things up there. But we're going to be very low key on this. We're going to work with the emergency management people. If the team shows some things that are really at risk, we'll let the FEMA folks work with them on that. But we're not going to. I understand fully the concern of a landowner if he wakes up one morning and sees red and purple and stuff all over his property. And so we have to find a way to work that process so that they want it. And then, like I say, if we had a major storm event in Maggie Valley, there'd be a lot of people wanting it. But having good science behind what you do results in better grants and more money. Just that Ipsen process we did with TVA helped us raise about $4 or $5 million in grant money. And Greg Shooping has a big problem up there, having the geological information to back it up will result in a whole lot better grant application if he goes after FEMA money or somebody else's money. The geologist that worked on the survey at the Ghost Town slide, you may have heard about that. You know where Ghost Town is up in Maine? No, I need to get up to Haywood County. Anyway, but it's no longer.
It's so wonderful here, we don't want to leave.
I understand. But anyway, there's a long-term attraction up there called Ghost Town. It's been having financial problems. But they built a retaining wall right up at the top. And there's a lot of controversy as to how this thing started. It turns out there have been over 15 years, there have been about three different slides in this area. But that retaining wall and some other stuff gave way and didn't kill anybody, but it sent many, many people, you know, to some other spot for a while. The geologists that are working on the mapping project came to help on that project and was able to help get you about $1 million in USDA money to help stabilize things. The amazing thing was a fellow called one of our soil and water people about this house that was for sale in that area. And he was all excited about the deal he was going to get. And he felt that, man, they fixed all the problems. They can't be in any trouble now. And after a little discussion, he said, well, you do realize there's been three slides up there in the last 15 years. It didn't faze them at all. So, I don't know. As long as people are aware. I like to have them sign off on the people's debate, but I do know my house may slide down the hill. Anyway, well.
Did you find this being done in any other states with mountainous terrain like ours?
No, but I am a Yankee. State of Connecticut, I understand, does have something akin to this. North of the Mason-Dixon, of course, they incorporated a regulation down here. They'll hand you your head if you do that. So you have to find a way to work with folks on these sort of things instead of just saying, and this never started out. Haywood Waterways has never promoted any regulatory initiative. We're there to help solve problems. We help get money to help landowners solve problems on their property.
and stuff like that. That's the approach we took. We stay away from touching that third rail.
So you think if the developers adopted this, that they could build more, they could develop lots on areas that are...
They could develop more efficiently and more effectively. They'd spend less on their roads. They may get more, they may get fewer houses, but the net result would be that they should have more profit. And they, but there will be some properties, and we ran into one or two of these. I mean, somebody had a small 40-acre tract, and the whole thing was steep as a cow's face. You know, you might have put one or two houses on it, but that's about all you're going to put on it. And we have lots of situations in Haywood County where I had somebody doing a little carpet work for me. Turns out he inherited a 45-acre tract. He knew how to operate a bulldozer. He became the most fined individual in Haywood County. The problem was, when all of it was done, all you have, you know, is a sliding mess up there on the hillside. I like the idea of your bonds, but so far, strictly caveat, in Haywood County, it is strictly caveat emptor. Let the buyer beware.
So what do you think in terms of savings that a developer could realize?
We've not tried to calculate that. There's other places that have done something somewhat similar called conservation-based development, and they've done some of those kind of analyses. Our focus, the minute you get talking about this stuff, people want to bring in green communities and all that. That's fine if they want to. Ours is very basic. We just want it to stay on the hill, be safe, be something you can maintain, and keep as much of the crud out of the creek as you can. And if we could do that, we'd feel very, very good. And if people want to make it green or whatever, and green building and so forth, fine, that's their choice. You know, that's all we want is something that's going to stay in place. And you can do it. I mean, the frustrating part is that there's people out there that can help you do exactly that. And but we have to be willing to at least listen to them a little bit. Yeah.
Thank you.
Well,
thank you, Gordon.
Appreciate it.
Very good.
I will hand out these performance standards.
Okay. Moving on to new business. Megan, you had...
update us? Yeah, every 3 years with our permit to operate with Dieter, out at Southern Mountain Transport Facility. Part of that permit operates the update our master plan every 3 years and submit it to them. It is due in the next couple months. And we will end up presenting it to the board, and we also do it for the jurisdictions in the county, towns and municipalities that have trash operations. Fletcher, Lowell Park, so they'll also, their boards will review the plan and pass the resolution on it. And it's I'm sure our board will want to know what your take on the plan. And so I was going to ask the consultant here that's working with us, Dave Hasker, with McGill, to kind of give you a breakdown. But the meat of it for, you know, from strategic level is the recycling plants.
That's right, Marcus. The plan focuses on waste reduction and how to do that. That's some information here. And it allows you to calculate the waste reduction that you need to meet your goals. And then it's up to y'all fine folks to figure out a way to meet those.
You need another copy?
That's all I brought with me.
Okay.
Can you
go share?
Share.
Who needs one?
I'll go run some copies when we get the
receipt. So the plan looks at a baseline year, which was 1991, and your per capita disposal rate for that year. That was 1.14 tons per person in the county. And so everything you do is based on that per capita rate. And the state has asked that counties reduce by 40% from this rate, and which is very difficult to do. I don't know if many counties have met that goal yet. If you turn on the third page, table 10, I'm at lower right there. That gives you your per capita disposal since 1991, and the right column. And if you looked at it, you'd probably see that mirror how the economy has done during that period. There was a time in 2003, 2004, where your disposal per person increased, and that corresponds to the economy. Waste disposal is a good indicator of the economic conditions at any time. And then in 2008, you can see how it starts to drop, 0.98. And then down to the current 0.89 tons per person in the county. And so the question with this plan is, where do you go from here? And Marcus has established some very aggressive goals. He wants to go even further than this 0.89. He wants to get down to 0.85 tons in 5 years, and then in 10 years get down to 0.80 tons. And that'll take a lot of work to get to. If you turn to, I've got a table in here that shows the tonnage on the second page, table 2. Can you see that? It lists the tonnage disposed each year, about 95,000 tons. The tonnage recycled, 6,400 tons. And that represents about 6% of your solid waste stream. So we've identified this as your main target for waste reduction. If you can increase that number from, say, 6% to 10% over the next 5 or 10 years, you'd have a very significant savings in our disposed waste. And also you would save money in the process. Marcus could tell you how much it costs to ship waste out of county, and it's not cheap. And if you could find someone who can buy this or can sell it, take it for free perhaps, and sell it, it's a much better option. And so, Katie talked earlier about the American Recycling in ENCA, and it'd be worth a trip out there to see what they do. It's very interesting. The separation that they do, and so that would be the best way to tackle the goal, is to increase that recyclable commodities, get it up towards 10%, and then try to reduce the waste disposal.
Do we have any data for the yearly recyclable percentages?
We don't have that data. I would think that it would be similar to what you're seeing in the past year, around 6%.
Was it 2% 10 years ago? Do we know anything about
it? It was lower. You're right about that. It definitely was. Wow. There weren't markets for it.
And it seems to me that you're trying to tackle this from the wrong end. The packagers, if you're packaging something in a smaller way, I mean, you get a box and it's full of packaging, it's full of everything, you're going to throw away more.
Right.
You get one little item and a lot of packaging.
Right.
If things were packaged smaller and in recyclable material, there'd be less throwaway and more recyclable.
And I think you see that it's more common now because it costs money for expensive packaging.
But I mean, if the regulation went on what they could package in rather than what people could throw away, because
mm-hmm.
you're going to end up kind of like the crazy cat lady with a room full of stuff you can't throw away.
Right.
I mean,
right.
If you're getting this material, you've got to do something. And milk jugs won't recycle with butter jugs and soda jugs. if everything was made of one material so it could be ground up and recycled together.
Well, that's a worthy goal.
I mean,
well, and we're focusing on one of the three R's, obviously, the recycling part of it. And with this study and with our operations out at out of Stony Mountain, I would tell you we have spent a lot the past 2 years ramping up and improving our infrastructure at Stony Mountain to be able to facilitate an increase in recycling. I would have hated to know that we would have doubled our recycling 5 years ago. It would have been a tragedy because if we couldn't accommodate it, it would have been a bad thing. Now that we've got our infrastructure in place, we have a year behind us of the haulers recycling plan. So not only can you recycle in Henderson County at our convenience center, all of the haulers in Henderson County are required to offer recycling, and they can bring that material to us. We have the ability to accommodate it through our contract with American. We actually have a rough estimate doubled our recycling over the past couple of years. We are now transferring out as much single stream from the haulers, about three loads a week, as we are our dual stream from the convenience center. So when you see those numbers, the per capita numbers going down, it's a reflection of two things. One, of the decrease in the volume of trash we're getting because of the economy, but it's an increase in the recycling also. And if you get in there and you start crunching the numbers, you can see that it is, also accountable to the increase in the recycling. As I talked to the ECO's Recycling Committee a couple of weeks ago, our focus now is shifting from infrastructure to behavior and outreach and starting to let the people know the opportunities in Henderson County that are there to recycle. And as Dave mentioned, I think they're aggressive goals for 5 and 10 years, but they are possible. And I think we have one of the most important parts in place now, and that's the ability to physically handle that kind of material. So,
real admirable that the county can do that, but if on a federal level it was regulated to where the shippers and packagers packaged it better, it would make your job a lot easier.
There's no doubt.
This is a lot of information to absorb at one
sure.
point.
Sure, of course.
The summary of solid waste program costs for 2010 and 11. Is it to be assumed that if we keep moving toward this amazing goal of 40%, those will go up, those prices?
Right now, you're hitting on a pretty important thing. Our revenues to operate our program come from the net revenues from trash, basically. So we've got what we get for our tipping fee less what we pay to ship it down to Union County, about $18 a ton. Right now, with our contract with American, we are getting, depending on the markets, in the neighborhood of that per ton for our material. So
you're in a break-even in your transportation and dumping?
We don't pay transportation.
Oh, okay. You said $18 dollars per ton.
We don't pay. We pay $39 a ton to have our material trash taken down to Union County, South Carolina.
Okay.
The MRF, the American that you offered to get the tour, comes and picks up our recycling and takes it to their facility at their charge.
Right.
And then they pay us by contract on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes when the market's good, it's better than $18 average ton. Sometimes it's less. You get your crystal ball out, be dangerous, and get your crystal ball out.
I'm in the business that changes from 1 minute to the next.
It really does. But it was one of the first markets to recover after the March 9th, 08.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been strong this year. But, will the recycling markets get stronger? Will they, or in the future, will they not?
Well, paper's off right now. But
right now, we're making it work, and we're not charging haulers for recycling at all.
So you're netting something out, or what you net out from your sale of your recyclable material, you're funding your operation.
I'll tell you, if you brought me a ton of trash or a ton of recycling, I'd be in a net about the same.
Okay.
Some years it's better or worse, but it's close.
I guess I'm saying, is the taxpayer paying some of these costs?
It is an enterprise fund. That's a very important thing to note. And we operate at Stony Mountain completely on revenues generated at Stony Mountain. So there are no property tax dollars whatsoever involved. fact, we, our fund had a part of building an animal shelter, and we're getting reimbursed back for that, so we're kind of actually helping the other way.
If you're able to achieve your per capita disposal rate, reduce that, can you translate that into dollar savings for the county?
Well, to expand on my, what I just mentioned, I think you're looking at, that because it's an operation, an enterprise operation, fees cover its expenses, I think we'll be able to continue doing that. And I think we'll be able to, keep a hold on our tipping fees. The recycling markets tank, that'd be more difficult. If they get better, that would be easier.
How have the haulers been cooperating? Satisfied?
Most of them are. Remember, we've got a transition plan. There was, I inherited a situation where we had haulers that were not necessarily using compliant equipment. We've given them the 4 years to get compliant equipment. I found the ones that are the professional haulers with the compliant, state compliant equipment are participating, and even some of the ones with them that aren't. So, but there are some folks that are not. It's not mandatory. They just happen to be in the office.
You don't track corrugated or news? It's not in here for 20.
That's not the reporting requirement for Diener, but we.
But
we,
you recycle.
We do track. Yeah. Oh yes, yes. Mm-hmm. We again, the haulers bring it to us all commingled into one called single stream, mm-hmm. all fiber, all containers. At our convenience center, we take it in dual stream. Really, it's a three stream: fiber, cardboard, and bottles, cans, jars, and jugs. Mm-hmm. But it all goes to American. We get better prices on the dual stream material because it's already separated. It's easier for American to process.
We don't deal at Stony Mountain with any commercial.
Yes, very much.
Haulers
do bring us commercial material.
Okay.
Some of them do take it directly to American. We're fine with whichever.
Commercial haulers.
Yeah, we do get some the front loader packer trucks, which are commercial. They're servicing dumpsters, and it's both
some commercial operations like restaurants have the estate law now recycle bottles.
That's correct.
Is that working out as far as you know?
As far as I know, we're not regulating that, but
right.
I'm not hearing any. Initially, there were some difficulties from the restaurants about how to facilitate recycling, where do they put the dumpster, that kind of stuff, that I have not heard.
Well, what I'm thinking along the lines of is, if the county can get some numbers which show that the commercial end of things is working really well, that could be something to be held up to the residential end of it.
Well,
I want to match what these guys are doing. They can do it.
Not to toot our horn, but I have a lot of confidence in the trash figures that David's stated reporting. That is tracked very well. The recycling is a lot more difficult to track. I know what comes to me. I know what goes to American, but BorgWarner, folks in Steelcase Building, are we really tracking what their material, where the material goes? It goes to Ashton Waste. Does that get credited to us or not? So I would tell you, I'm very confident that we're doing better than the numbers that are reported because we're not tracking all the stuff that originates in Henderson County. But yeah, you're right. That would be good to compare. There's a lot of opportunities in the commercial markets. And there's a huge
regulation standpoint. Get the public aware that the industry is doing their job. They've come along. It's not the residential people that
And Megan's working with the apartment, trying to identify apartment complexes that, which is a commercial entity that can offer recycling. It's discouraging the amount of those businesses that are not.
Is any recycling collected in Henderson County taken out of the county?
Oh, no,
I mean ultimately yes, but I mean at the first step.
Yeah, the Fletcher.
The haulers pick up something in Henderson County. Can they take it to the curbside and
get
the pumper?
Yep,
they can.
Yeah. Fletcher contracts with curbside management to do their recycling. So.
And we get calls from industries all the time. I've got this odd type of paper that has this glue on it. Help me try to find somebody to recycle it. I get them in touch with Waste Reduction Partners, which is a volunteer organization with Diener, and they work very closely with a lot of industries in the county trying to find a source or a place to send these materials. And there's a lot of businesses out there that want to bring these materials out. And they, we talk to them all the time about trying to help them find a place to send it. You know, most of the time it's odd things. You know, it's paper with the glue on the back of it. You know, things like that. But they're out there and they're really trying to recycle.
But Mr. Chairman, Mr. Bruckheimer will tell you, I can talk trash all day long. I love it. And it's really what excites me of all the things that I do for Henderson County. But as far as, you know, the big nugget in this update that we wanted to, you know, get y'all's feedback on would be those recyclables. And the last time I presented it 3 years ago, the board definitely asked, well, you know, what did the DAC, or at that time it was a, you know, solid waste advisory committee, what did they think?
And they established a 20% reduction goal, and you made it up to 21%. So, you know, you met that goal.
And 3 years out of five. So.
Yeah, that's
now,
right.
Part of that was because of
the, part of it's
the economy.
Because of the economy.
But,
I'll take it however we get it.
But there again, we also are not counting for all the recycling. So.
Marcus, could you just comment on the situation with the plastics?
Yeah, we're working with American right now to start offering number 7 to increase I hate to even mention the word number 7 because that's not the way you talk about recycling. The numbers are out. It's all materials and shapes and that kind of thing. Bottles, cans, jars, and jelly. But yeah, there's a material out there we're not doing. There's actually markets for it. We just got to get, you know, work with American. Right now I have a contract for certain materials, so when I go to him to talk to him about opening up to another material, he's of course going to open it up for other discussions too. But we are working on that. We have the facilities now to be able to offer more materials and make that. So as soon as I get the bugs worked out of our facility, like the railing and that kind of thing, we're working on, if I can't work with American, I'll just put a container out there and we'll source separate number 7 to the new place.
Is it possible we at some point we might have all plastics numbers 1 through 7 possibly in a single stream?
It's happening north of us in, you know, Duncan County, so I'm, you know, and you could be able to put all 7 of them in your sink stream. That's what we're working on, but right now our contract's with American, so they need to offer that service.
Awesome.
And I'll tell you right now, if you put it in there, it's getting processed.
He is pulling those out.
I can't officially tell you that we can take all of them, but they're not getting thrown in the trash.
So, you know, I don't know if you want to give them a motion or if y'all want to open up the floor for any comments that we might be able to add into the. It would be good, you know, had a unified.
Does anybody want to make a motion to endorse this plan? Dan? Seconded by Rich. Any discussion?
I'll just keep us informed. Yeah, keep this committee informed.
All those in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, same sign. There you go.
Well, we will bring make it for their next meeting if we could at least distribute with the agenda of the plan. And again, so the goals are, they're lofty, but I think achievable.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
Any other business before put forth before this body?
One announcement. Land of Sky is putting on the Mayor's Cup Raft Race this Sunday, and they asked me to ask this committee and any others if anyone wants to participate. It's a 4-person team raft race on the French Broad River. If anyone's interested, if there's 4 people that are on a committee or a staff or anybody that would like to do it, they can. It is a Sunday afternoon at 3:15. So
it's free.
Yeah, it's free.
They
give
supply
you all
the vehicle and a life jacket
to
hold it.
They can do it.
And the purpose of it is to get elected officials on the French Broad River and highlight the fact that the quality of the water, you know, compared to 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it's actually better. And it's that elected officials are, you know, part of what.
I think last year the city of Henderson won.
I'd like to bring up one other thing. I think, you know, serving on this committee takes a lot of time on your part, And I think that this committee ought to, as a matter of practice, recognize the contributions, express their appreciation to those who are completing their term. And this isn't a county-wide thing that I'm requesting, but just within the housing of this, within this committee, of instituting that practice. I think that's a good idea. Let's make that in the form of a motion. Rich?
Second.
Okay. All those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Very good. And as a, since you decided to do that, we have a fellow who is stepping off, leaving this good committee. Rich has served admirably over the last several years, 4 years. And those of us who have worked with him recognize his contributions and his conscientious way in which he has carried out his responsibility, and we're going to miss you. And in just a little token of our appreciation.
Aren't you going to sign it?
I will. Make it official. And thank you, Megan, for producing this for us. So, thank you, sir.
I thought maybe we're going to have a drink or something.
Very good. Date of time of next meeting. We normally meet in the first Thursday of the month, on a quarterly basis. However, the next gathering in September, there is a holiday that Monday. And I understand that some people are going on vacation.
What's the holiday?
Labor Day.
Do you want to move the meeting up? Is that possible to the next week?
I'll have to double check the calendar, but
okay.
We can tentatively schedule that.
We
have to come back.
Can you
email just to see?
No,
what
the holiday's on Monday,
before?
But some people are taking out vacation.
So is
that acceptable to have it the second Thursday in September?
Just what's
which is
the date? I'm curious.
13th?
The 13th.
Is that okay?
Anthony's checking down there right now.
All right.
13th of July?
No,
September.
The Animal Services Committee uses this room from 5:30 to 8:00.
We're out by 4:30.
I like that committee. Out by 4:30. Okay.
And there's another committee from 12:30 to 2:30, so we've got the orders.
No problem. Okay, so if that's agreeable, we will be meeting the second Thursday in September, specifically on September 13th, same time, conveying at 3 o'clock, guaranteeing that we'll be concluding by 4:30. Okay? Very good.
Sounds good.
Not hearing any objection, I move that we are adjourned. Thank you again for...